Welcome to 27 Most Important Health Questions. This audio is on nutrition from the title of the book. My name is Hugh McClung. I'm co-founder of EMED, which is the publishers of the book series. Our approach is to go through some of the key points in the book, but use the author, Graham Player, as a voice to give his viewpoint and answers to many of the questions. So let's get started. Graham, can you explain your background and interest in health and nutrition?
I come from a family of medical practitioners. My father was a doctor and my uncle was a doctor. My father was quite a prominent surgeon in Australia. And as a child, I was obviously brought up with an interest in health because it was all around me in the family. But also as a child, I had particular health problems. I was actually in a wheelchair after I was born for quite a number of years. And Western medicine was not able to help me in that particular situation. However, Chinese medicine was. We had a neighbour who was a practitioner of Chinese medicine, and he was able to do things to help me, which eventually got me out of the wheelchair. So as you can well imagine, I developed an interest in various approaches to health. It was not just Western medicine. My father also suffered from health problems to the stage where he was eventually unable to work. I can remember in one year at his age of 42, he actually had three heart attacks. So I was obviously quite influenced through my impression of Western medicine and what it could do and what it couldn't do. And this developed my own view of Western medicine. As you can imagine, my exposure as a child, my family, and my own experiences molded my understanding of what Western medicine could and could not do. My conclusion is that Western medicine was quite effective, but rather incomplete. Its focus was very much on disease and not on wellness or prevention or maintaining health. And it was obviously more effective on acute problems rather than ongoing chronic health problems. However, I have a lot of respect for Western medicine, and I do believe that Western medical science tries its best, but it has to work within certain constraints, which include scientific, legal, and philosophical constraints to come up with all its answers. And we all know that in other parts of the world, there are many different modalities that provide alternative options that do have proven successful outcomes in many cases. So in my life, I not only looked into Western medicine, but I ended up studying traditional Chinese medicine, which was a system of medicine to me that had developed over hundreds and thousands of years. And during that time, they had discovered what works and what doesn't work. Although Western medicine has not yet discovered, or perhaps not even sought to discover, the reasons why so many traditional medicines are beneficial, to me it doesn't make them any less credible. I then went on to develop an interest in nutrition, and this probably occurred as a result of my father's illness with his heart disease. So this would have been in my late teens, and I'm talking about the 1960s here. I discovered that Western medicine did not really embrace an effective nutritional model. And I guess this is mainly due to its focus on disease rather than prevention and wellness. At that time, there was virtually no formal education available in the subject of nutrition. So it started and has remained for me in the area of personal study and research, which I have done over the past 40 years.
Next question, Graham. Why is nutritional planning so important?
Well, firstly, I believe that the majority of people, perhaps beyond 45 years of age, are interested in prevention and wellness and staying healthy. Perhaps younger people don't have the same concern. I see nutrition as a very important part of staying healthy and remaining well. It can also be used in helping with the treatment of disease states as well. Nutrition to me is only one of the things that we can use in this way of maintaining wellness. There are other things, and nutrition is just one of them. Nutrition can also help in terms of addressing chronic disease states that we see today. And in fact, one of the causes of many of today's chronic lifestyle-related diseases is actually poor nutrition. For some conditions, we may administer drugs, and they may be indeed beneficial. But for others, non-drug therapies may also be advantageous. And there is significant evidence and research available to support this view. I think many health practitioners do not themselves seek out information and research results outside of their standard medical model. And if that's the case, they're not likely to discover that there are indeed other non-drug-based therapies that do have merit. I do seek out this information from various research areas and professional journals and research studies that are undertaken across the world, and I make this sort of information available in my books. To use the promising results from nutritional studies and apply it to one's own condition, such as prostate problems or anything else, does require careful consideration. It requires a plan that is devised for the person to help that person achieve a given outcome in terms of wellness and health. Obviously, it's always better to use a preventative approach and remain healthy in the first place. However, the focus of our medical system today is on a sickness-based system where practitioners are rewarded and paid for treating sickness and doing tests and so on. And I hope one day this will all change to a prevention-based model where maintaining health and wellness is the real objective. But this is going to require a major cultural shift. And what I see as one of the hurdles to overcome is working out a business model of how to pay health practitioners for keeping people healthy. Meanwhile, there's a lot of information already in place concerning nutrition and the benefits it can provide if we, the general public, choose to use it for our own preventative model and also to help in the treatment of our disease. And that is the type of information I write about in my books. So my hope is that people will be able to work out a nutrition action plan that's actually focused on maintaining health and also helping any ill health condition they may have. Even if that action plan is to do further research themselves or to discuss it further with their own health practitioner.
Graham, could you just elaborate on one aspect? I've read that the traditional medical schools only have 20 hours of training in nutrition. If this is the case, then it is a huge gap in the medical profession's knowledge. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. The majority of the medical schools don't offer very much at all in their course content in terms of nutrition. It's obviously seen as not a critical part of the education. And when I guess when you consider that the education is really focused on producing practitioners who can treat people who have disease, I suppose it's logical to understand from their point of view that nutrition is not recognized as something that you should do in terms of correcting a physiological problem.
One comment I would make is I did a survey of medical books on Amazon paperbacks, and I was skimming through, maybe 500 books, and I was looking for the subject of nutrition, and almost without exception, in these books treating major diseases, or a good number of them, I could find no comment on new nutrition.
Yes, that doesn't surprise me that you don't find very much. And it endorses and emphasizes the fact that in the medical area, nutritional knowledge is not seen as something that is necessary for primary care practitioners to go about treating their patients.
Standing back and taking the broad view, Graham, perhaps you can go back in time and give me an overview of how nutrition has changed over the last century, and particularly its impact on chronic diseases.
Over the past century, there's been significant changes in nutrition and our dietary habits. And this has happened primarily as a result of industrialization and urbanization, economic development and globalization. And many of these changes have had a serious impact on our health. This has resulted in the unhealthy contemporary Western diet that we see today, which is typically high in saturated fats and low in unrefined carbohydrates. And today we see an increase in chronic diseases, such as obesity, diabetes, stroke, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, and cancer. And these chronic conditions are all lifestyle-related and in the main, preventable diseases, obviously except for a small minority of cases where genetics or birth defects may play a role. The typical American diet today, coupled with increasingly sedentary lifestyle habits, has largely contributed to this situation. And it's important to remember here that proper and nutritious food intake, as well as physical activity, are mutually interactive, and both are necessary to maintain health. It's been widely accepted for many years that diet and nutrition are key risk factors in the development of chronic diseases. And this concept is not something new.
Well, what exactly has changed, Graham, with respect to the nutrition makeup that has caused the rise of the chronic diseases?
Basically, there are two very important things. First is that our mainly plant-based diet that prevailed up to the middle of the 20th century has gradually been replaced by a diet that's high in saturated fat, high in refined carbohydrates, in animal products, in sugar, and in salt. And it's low in complex carbohydrates, fiber, fruit, and vegetables. And the second important thing is that the production of food has changed, and it now incorporates many chemicals. And the growing, the ripening, and the storage and distribution methods have changed as well. Many of the foods grown today, as well as the soil that they're grown in, have become grossly deficient in nutritional content and loaded with chemicals. Even animal products have become full of chemicals and hormones. Many factors are responsible for shaping this, our typical dietary pattern over time. Factors such as economics, prices, our income, our culture, the availability of food items, and our preferences. Another important contributing factor is what's actually made available to us at the shop, at the restaurants, the fast food outlets, the supermarkets, and our diet and nutrition are increasingly being controlled by what is being produced and by the choices presented to us. Food production and availability today are very carefully planned with profitability-focused strategies that include very clever and sometimes deceptive labelling, stockpiling of foods, advertising, marketing, and also now we're seeing genetic modifications. So the way we eat today has probably changed more in the past 50 years than it has in the past 500 years. And the way I see it is that given the present circumstances, chronic disease conditions are predicted to worsen over the coming decades unless there is a paradigm shift in emphasis from treating and managing the symptoms of diseases to preventing them from occurring in the first place.
Graham, on this issue, what has to change in our current medical environment to cause practitioners to realize that nutrition is important and some change has to happen?
Well, I think it requires a significant change to the whole model of health in our community. At the moment, as I keep saying, it's focused on fitness. So the medical system earns its money by administering tests and providing drugs, providing hospital rooms and so on. That's the way the system works. If the community was healthy, then one has to question where the medical system would be making its money. And that requires a solution before there can be any change for the better. The way I see it, the medical model is quite concerned about having an approach that is based on prevention, because they're not sure how they can continue to function in that particular model.
Graham, now let's move to a topic which in the book was called Additions to Your Nutrition Plan. And maybe can you discuss how one can go about understanding what the right plan might be?
There are many items that you can include and modify in your diet. You hear people talking about this all the time. We should have more of this and less of that and so on. And often these are items that have been found to be to influence general health and also various health conditions, whether it be prostate health or anything else. Diet and nutrition is actually a very wide and a deep subject. We all have dietary and nutritional habits that we've formed over many years, and these habits are influenced by many things and actually developed by many things. And these sort of things include the culture that we belong to, the family we're born into, the social groups that we're part of, our age, the availability of food, the lifestyle we choose to live, our state of health, and our race. Obviously, Asians eat different things to Caucasians. Our nutritional needs do change over time, depending on our age and our lifestyle, the particular work we do, how demanding it is, and so on. The environment we live in and what we're exposed to environmentally, and also our state of health. And in many cases, our nutritional habits do not match our nutritional needs. So there are things that you can add to your nutritional plan and also things that you can restrict in your nutritional plan. And both of those things are necessary in arriving at the optimum nutrition.
The book on nutrition is under the general category of prostate health, Graham. So on that regard, Perhaps you can give us some suggestions on additions to your nutrition plan that address prostate health directly.
Well, my approach to this is to first consider everything that is beneficial and important, and then group things together into degrees of importance in terms of prostate health and prostate problems. There's far too many things. You can't just say, well, here's 50 things, I'll just include them all in my diet and nutrition. It's a bit over the top. So I've created four groups, and these are created by myself, and other people may not agree with these, but these four groups consist of the first group being what I call essential items to include in nutrition plan. And the second group is what I've called highly effective items to include. And the third one is effective items to include. And the fourth one is moderately effective items. So, as I said, these are my own personal groupings, and they're based mainly on two factors. Firstly, what seems to be important from the investigations and research that I've done of various studies and clinical trials available, and contemplating what I would choose to do if I personally had a prostate problem. Now, I fully expect these groupings to change over time as more knowledge is gained, and different people may rank them differently than I have done according to their own priorities. But that's how I see it.
One of the observations I would have on the groupings, Graham, is that and the discussion of the nutrients that will come to follow is that it's extremely important to have a very exhaustive view of the best science that supports a conclusion. In many cases, people get stuff in the email and people suggesting approaches, and what is really lacking is a discussion of the science and support of the science for a result. Would you agree?
In some cases, yes. I think the science is there. In many cases, unfortunately, the internet and our emails are full of things that we get that say, eat this, eat that, don't do this, do this. And they're not really supported by any scientific explanation. If I get such emails, and I get them just like everyone else does, the first thing I do is to think, okay, that seems as though it may be interesting. I've not heard of that before. And then I will go and search the science. I look at the professional journals, the scientific studies, the clinical trials, and I'll just see what does exist in terms of supporting or not supporting these particular things. So, yes, on the one hand, a lot of the information you get doesn't have any evident scientific support. But on the other hand, there's a lot of scientific analysis and research and studies going on there that most people do not see, not even the medical practitioners. And I believe it's very important for us to look at that and to form our opinions based on the studies that are being done. And that's the sort of thing that I do in putting my books together.